I don't see the horseman again for days. He doesn't call on me, and I stay the hell away from his tent, spending my time reading, making weapons, and visiting with Zara and her frightened nephew. So I'm surprised when, on the day we pack up camp, I'm given a horse and instructed to wait for war. I almost don't. I'm no longer upset about the revelation that war's dead haunt all the fallen cities of the world. It's terrible and shocking, and it makes the horseman even more barbaric than I already imagined him to be. But it is what it is, and now I know. I'm not even upset about the nauseating walk back to camp, though I had been for a while after I returned. At this point, I'm just pissed off because I've been pissed off, and I don't know, the emotion has developed some inertia of its own. But then war comes riding through camp, looking like a red sun rising on the horizon, and I feel eager to see him, eager to be angry with him, eager to hear his deep voice and to gaze at that face, and maybe even to touch him. I may not like the guy, but I think I'm addicted to him. The horseman stops when he gets to my side. He stares at me for several seconds.
Wife?
I cannot tell what he's thinking. War? He gives me a slight nod and takes off again. I follow him to the front of the procession, feeling the eyes of the entire army on us. And then they're behind us, and it's just me and War and the endless road ahead of us. The horseman is the first one to speak.
If we're to be married, we have to get along.
We're not married, I say for the 5 billionth time.
We are.
Exasperating man.
You had a dead man tackle me.
Okay, maybe I am still a little ticked about my walk back to camp. I have a fucking right to be. I smelled like a corpse for 2 entire days.
You wouldn't listen.
No, it was you who wouldn't listen.
Oh yeah, I am so ready to jump back into the arena and fight this man.
You're so used to commanding people that you think you can command me too.
Of course I can.
I'd throttle war if I could get away with it.
That's not how marriage works.
I try to simmer my emotions back down.
At least, not a good marriage. And you want this to be a good marriage, don't you?
Why am I even trying to reason with him? He gives me a long look.
Of course I do, wife.
Then you need to listen to me, and you need to respect my opinions.
It's the 2 most obvious rules of marriage, and yet war is completely unaware of them.
And you need to respect my will. As my wife, you should be obedient the few times I demand it of you.
Obedient?
I'm seeing red.
Fuck it. I want a divorce.
No.
I'm not going to be obedient. Hell, you don't even want me to be obedient. I know you don't.
He's clearly been around too many misogynists. War runs a hand down his face, one of the rings he wears catching the light.
I feel like I'm being beaten with my own blade. Fine. I will try to be more respectful to your opinions, even when they are absurd.
I glare at him.
And I will listen to your soft mortal wants. But in exchange, you must listen to my will when I give it.
I will listen to it.
I just might not go along with it.
Good.
He looks pleased. I just give him a look. This is going to be a long ride. I've abandoned my rules. The ones for surviving the apocalypse. I don't know when it happened. Whether I left them back in Ashdod, or if they traveled all the way to Arish before I forsook them. I only know that each one no longer applies to surviving the apocalypse, now that I'm stuck with one of the horsemen orchestrating it. The only rule I still fall back on is Rule 5, be brave. Every single waking second of my day consists of me trying to be brave when all I really want to do is shit myself and hide. Unfortunately, out here in the barren desert, there's nowhere to hide. It's a long, lonely ride. The road we take is surrounded by uninterrupted desert, and even though I know that the ocean lingers off to my right, the highway is inland enough that I don't usually catch glimpses of that blue water. The summer sun cruelly beats down on the two of us, and for all the time we've been riding, we might have gone 2 kilometers or 200. It's impossible to say. The only real way I can tell we're making progress is by the few landmarks we pass. an abandoned house, a barren outpost, a trough of water next to a hand pump well. Oh, and of course, the few fishing villages we pass by, a cluster of carrion birds circling above them. Eventually, the sun dips down ahead of us, and War chooses a place for us and our horses to rest. After the two of us get a fire going, I begin to fry up dinner. This trip, War's packed a skillet and some salted meat to cook. I stare at the strips of meat after I lay them out. The sight of them twists my stomach. It looks too much like all those humans whose bodies were ripped open during battle. Next to me, the horseman sits on his haunches, staring at the fire.
Why do you have an army if you could simply use your dead to kill off humans?
It seems to me that with the sweep of his hand, War could annihilate us all, and it would be a whole lot faster and more thorough.
Why don't you sing all the time if you have the ability to?
His eyes flash in the firelight.
Why not run everywhere if you can? Just because I have the power doesn't mean I always want to wield it.
So he doesn't want to kill us off that efficiently. I don't know whether that's merciful of him or just cruel.
Besides, I rather enjoy camp. It reminds me of who I am and who I have always been.
Battle brought to life.
That's a bit odd, don't you think? You want to remember who you are by gathering humans around you and enjoying their company?
No, I don't think it's odd at all.
War gets up to grab a bottle of wine he's packed. He comes back with it in two glasses. He sits back down.
I am born of men, and I am here to judge them. Naturally, I want to be amongst them.
So there's a part of you that likes humans?
Of course I like humans.
War uncorks the wine and begins to pour us each a glass.
Just not enough to spare them.
That is so twisted. He hands me one of the glasses and I take a deep drink from it.
I am a commander of men. Not even death can stop my reach.
Not even death can stop my reach.
War is right.
Even in death, he can weaponize us. I remember the revenant who led me back to camp. His eyes were mostly gone. His skin was mottled and sloughing off, and yet he moved as though he were alive.
How do you control the dead?
The horseman levels his gaze at me.
We are talking about the powers of God, Miriam. There is no human explanation I can give you.
Could you do it right now, if you wanted to?
War raises his eyebrows.
You want me to raise the dead?
That's not exactly what I asked, and yet, now that he's broached the subject, I'm perversely curious. I don't know why. It's ghoulish and frightening. I nod anyway. The horseman reaches out, and I feel the ground around me shiver, like it's ticklish. Several meters away, the arid earth shifts, and the partial skeleton of a horse pulls itself from the sandy soil. The creature is missing many of its bones, but it stands as best it can. It's hard to say that this is anything other than magic. The skeletal horse begins to move as though it were alive, even though it looks long dead.
It's not human.
I can reanimate both people and creatures.
The horse ambles up to me, and instinct is telling me to get up and flee. But damn it, I've faced worse. So I sit there and let it get close. The horse bumps its muzzle against my shoulder. And part of me is disarmed by this poor thing that moves like a horse and acts like a horse, even though it's long since breathed its last.
Are you satisfied?
I nod, maybe a little too quickly. The horse takes several steps away from me, then all at once, it falls to the earth, nothing more than a scattered pile of bones. The night sweeps in and the fire burns itself down. Just when the evening air is starting to get a chill to it, the horseman gets up from the fire. I can hear him at my back, removing his weaponry. I still hold my empty glass, and all that wine in my stomach is churning. This is the first time I've traveled with the horseman since our argument, and out here, without any army around us, my universe feels very small. It's only big enough to hold me, War, and this uncomfortable feeling that rises in me every time we're together. The horseman comes back to me and reaches out a hand.
Come, wife. It's late and I want to feel your warm flesh against mine.
That same uncomfortable feeling rises in me. Right now, it's giddiness and a thrill that comes with giving in to the horseman. We're either all or nothing, enemies or lovers. It's dizzying. Our bodies get along much better than our mouths. I take War's hand and let him lead me to the pallet he made us. There's just one bed tonight. My abs clench at the sight. The horseman reels me in close, his hands going to my dark hair as he leans in and kisses me. And the kiss is all it takes to break me wide open. I've shored up all my desire for him during the long day, but now I gasp as his heavy hand moves down my neck and along my collarbone. My own hands find his abs, and God was clearly biased when he made this man, because War is perfect. Every hard ridge, every sloping muscle and lean edge, perfect, perfect, perfect. As he strips me down, I try not to think about the fact that I'm so very obviously not perfect. I have scars from that long ago accident. I have scars from all the skirmishes I've fought in since. And I have scars from all the nicks and cuts I've given myself for my job. And then there are all the imperfections that I was simply born with. I'm crudely fashioned compared to this horseman. But as War lowers me down, removing the last of my clothing, his hands and lips move over me like I am perfect. The horseman slips between my thighs, and as I stare up at the stars, a stupid, awful tear slips out. Because I feel so cherished. So cherished and so goddamn perfect. It shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't. But it is. After the two of us have exhausted ourselves, I lay with War on his pallet. Our pallet, I guess, if I'm being honest with myself. I don't bother telling the horseman that this feels right. That his ridiculous body somehow fits mine like a puzzle piece. War runs his fingers through my hair.
Tell me about yourself.
What do you want to know?
I glance over at him. I wish I could see his face in the darkness.
What makes you love being a human? What are your favorite things? I want to know it all.
I like art.
I turn back to gaze at the sky.
I like repurposing junk into beautiful objects.
You mean your weapons?
I stretch myself out along his body. In response, War pulls me in close to him.
That's just how I was able to make money off of my art. But yeah, my weapons are part of it.
And why do you enjoy art?
I lift a shoulder.
It's cathartic for me. I don't know.
Tell me something else.
I miss the taste of my mother's shakshuka.
I never learned how to cook her exact version of the spicy breakfast dish. There are so many small, simple things like that that I lost when I lost her.
What else?
My sister Leah wanted to be a singer.
I know War is asking me about myself, but this is who I am. A lonely girl carrying around the ghosts of her family.
I don't know where she even got her voice from. The rest of us couldn't carry a tune, but she could. She used to sing when she couldn't fall asleep at night, and I used to hate it. We shared a room, but then at some point it became soothing, and I'd often drift off to her songs.
That might have been the worst part of all when I came back. The silence. There were so many nights where I'd lay there on my old mattress, my sister's bed across from mine, and I'd wait for the song that never came. After a while, I started sleeping in her bed like I could somehow suck out the marrow of her from her old sheets. It never worked. Not even when I then moved to my mother's bed to try to draw some small comfort there.
Sometimes I carve music notes into my bows and arrows. I don't even know what the notes stand for or if they're even accurately drawn. But they remind me of Leah.
The horseman runs an idle hand down my arm, and I'm reminded about how intimate this whole situation is.
Do you carve anything else onto your weapons?
I glance at him again.
Why do you want to know?
I want to know everything about you, wife.
I draw Hamsas for my father.
I can't even say how many weapons I've decorated with the image of an evil eye fitted into the palm of a hand.
Why Hamsas?
Unconsciously, I reach for my bracelet, fingering the small metal charm as I focus back up at the sky.
Hamsas are known among Jews as the Hand of Miriam. Anytime my father would see a piece of jewelry with a Hamsa on it, he'd buy it for me, because it was my namesake.
The hamsa I wear is the last bit of jewelry I have from him. Everything else I've lost over the last decade. I'm petrified of the day I'll lose this too.
And in honor of my mother, I'd sometimes carve a sword, or sometimes a sword piercing a heart, into my bows. The sword is in honor of what I learned from her books on weaponry, and the heart, well, that one's for self-explanatory reasons.
My own heart aches now, revisiting all the reasons why I so fondly cherished my family and why I so desperately missed them. The horseman is quiet. He doesn't do very well, I've come to find, with difficult emotions like grief and sadness.
It's strange being a human. For the longest time, I watched what it was like to be human, but I never felt it. I didn't understand the true bliss of touching a woman, or tasting food, or feeling the sun on my skin. I knew of it, but I didn't understand it until I became a man. There are things I still don't understand.
War might not know it, but he's captivating when he talks like this. As though he has one foot in this world and one foot in another.
What sorts of things?
Loss.
He's quiet for a moment.
It's one of the most common aspects of war, and yet I've never experienced it.
You better hope you never do.
I think of my family all over again. Loss is a wound that never heals. Never, never, never. It scabs over, and for a time you can almost forget it's there. But then something, a smell, a sound, a memory, will split that wound right open, and you'll be reminded again that you're not whole. That you'll never fully be whole again.
Tell me more about them. Your family.
I don't know if I have it in me to keep talking about them. But then, my lips part and the words come pouring out.
My father was the wisest man I knew. But to be fair, I only knew him as a child. And when you're a kid, adults in general seem very wise.
I search the sky, trying to remember more.
My dad was funny. Really, really funny.
I smile as I say it.
He could make you laugh, usually at your own expense. It was okay, though, because he made fun of himself all the time, too. He was good at celebrating everyone's rough edges.
And he was so
real.
There were many times when he'd talk to me as though I were an equal.
With some people, you can never get beneath the surface, you know? Even though the horseman probably doesn't know.
With my father, you always could. I tried to hold on to his memory.
I've forgotten his voice. That's the most terrifying part of it all. I can't remember the way he sounded. I can remember things he said, but not that.
It's quiet for several seconds. The horseman doesn't say anything. He just strokes my hair.
My mother was quiet, but strong. I learned that after my father died, when she suddenly had to single-handedly take care of me and my sister. Her love was a fierce thing.
What happened to them?
I've already told him about how my father died. As for my mother and sister,
there was an accident. The water rushes in.
I touch my throat.
That's where I got this scar.
I can't bring myself to share the rest of the story. Moore's hand stops stroking my hair. After a moment, his fingers move down the column of my throat. They pause when they get to the scar. His thumb smooths over the raised skin between my collarbones. My own hand falls away from my throat, and I close my eyes against the feel of his fingertip.
I'm sorry, wife. Your misfortune is my gain.
My brows knit. That's such an odd thing to say.
What do you mean?
I open my eyes. War's lips brush my skin as he pulls me in close.
The day you received this scar is the day you became mine.
Not all places look like they've been touched by the apocalypse. There are the remote villages, like the one we enter 2 days later, that the modern world clearly swept past. These are the places where farmers still herd their livestock through the streets, and the dogs are wild, and the buildings use the same mud brick architecture they have for the last 1,000 years. These towns seem to have hardly felt the hit of the apocalypse, and they weathered it much more gracefully than my city did. War and I enter the fishing village, which is hardly more than a few streets perched next to the Mediterranean Sea. As we pass through, a couple men sit outside of their homes, sipping Turkish coffee and smoking hand-rolled cigarettes. I stare at them in wonder. War and I pass through many towns, but almost all of them have already been visited by death. Not this village. The people here are enjoying this day just as they would any other.
What are you going to do with them?
What I always do, wife.
My stomach clenches at that. Riding next to War is suddenly, distinctly uncomfortable. We're drawing eyes to us the farther into town we get. I realized who War was shortly after I first saw him. I wonder now, as people stare, whether they are having the same realization I once did. Or it could simply be that these days, no one trusts strangers, particularly strangers with giant fucking swords strapped to their backs.
You don't have to kill them, you know? You could just skip this place, just for the hell of it.
My wife and her soft heart.
It sounds like a genuine compliment.
Would you really like that? For me to spare these people?
Is he being serious? I take in his merciless features. Yes, I think he might actually be. I would. I barely dare to believe it. War stares at me for several seconds, and I hold his gaze, ignoring our growing audience. Eventually, he makes a sound at the back of his throat and focuses on the road again. I don't know what to make of that. My hands clench the reins. I'm so tense, so tense. I keep waiting for War to withdraw his sword, to tell me that it was all a clever trick. But he doesn't. We pass through the village, then leave it behind us altogether. Only then do I fully release my breath. It's not until the village is entirely out of sight, however, that I speak.
You didn't kill them.
No, I didn't. I have dead for that.
Beneath our feet, the ground quakes. It takes about a minute, but eventually I hear screams start up at our backs. And now I know exactly what's become of that village. This time, when camp is established and the tents go up, mine is missing, along with the rest of my things. I know who's behind this. I storm into War's tent.
Where is it?
The room is full of Phobos riders, all of them poring over yet another map of yet another town they're going to ravage. They glance over at me. Uzair, the one who caught me killing his comrade in Arish, frowns at me, while Hussein, the only Phobos rider who has been kind to me, gives me an unreadable look. But it's War's ominous form that manages to eclipse everyone else. Today, he looks particularly savage, with his arm guards on and his chest bare, his crimson tattoos glowing from where they wrap around his pecs.
Wife?
The kohl lining his eyes is especially thick, and it makes him look very other.
Where is my tent?
You're standing in it.
I narrow my gaze.
That is not what we agreed to.
I do not negotiate with humans.
My gaze sweeps across the room again, and I take in all the faces of War's riders. Suddenly, I understand. In Arish, I made the horseman look weak among his men. Now he's reclaiming his authority, at my expense. Right now, nothing I say will derail him. That's obvious from his expression alone. Anything else I say now will only serve to make me look weak and whiny, and already these riders seem to have a pretty low opinion of me. Giving War a final lingering look, I turn to leave. The horseman can make me live with him, but he can't force me to stick around during the day.
Oh, Miriam.
I reach the tent flaps.
One last thing. Tomorrow, when we head into battle, you will be riding with me.
The next morning, I wake to the feel of War's mouth trailing kisses over my shoulder. The room is dimly lit by oil lamps. The two of us are naked, and I feel him hard against me. His kisses move down my arm. This is what I feared about living with the horsemen. How is a lonely girl like me supposed to fight this? It's everything I've craved, and the devil next to me knows it.
Surrender.
I stretch back against him. You surrender. He groans, a hand gripping my hip. For a moment, he grinds into me. I feel him lean his forehead against my back, his breathing heavy.
I'm going to be damn near distracted today, imagining you right here, against me.
Reluctantly, he gets up, And while I might hate who he is and the fact that he's forced me to live with him, right now, I'm most upset that he's left my side. How's that for having your heart and your head at war with one another? I really need my own fucking tent back.
Come, wife. It's time to prepare for battle.
The reminder sobers me up. More people are going to die today. First it was Jerusalem, then Ashdod, then Arish. Now, from the whispers in the air, it sounds like we're attacking Port Said. I scrub my face, not ready to face another day of carnage. Across the tent, War pulls on his black pants, and then his black shirt. This outfit of War's is always the same, and it's always in pristine condition in the morning, regardless of how mangled and bloody it might be the day before. I grab my own shirt and pants, which aren't nearly so clean, and I pull them on. I sit back down to lace up my boots. Then I start donning my weaponry, starting with my bow and quiver.
Why do you keep letting me ride into battle?
I finish securing my quiver. From his perspective, I can't see any reason to let me keep joining the fight. The horseman glances over at me from where he's lacing up one of his leather greaves.
Why indeed? Would you prefer I chain you to our bed like the doting husband I am?
Only if you stayed with me. I'm being half serious. If I could keep War from battle? But no, his army and his dead would just do the killing for him. His eyes heat at that.
You were made to tempt me, wife.
The horseman finishes lacing one greave and moves to the other.
You told me we're to respect one another in a marriage.
I did. I'm surprised he remembers.
You want to fight? This is me respecting your wishes.
This is War's version of respect? I almost laugh at the absurdity of it. He's forced me to sleep in his tent. I mean, fuck respect right there. But he's still going to allow me to fight in a battle that could get me killed because that's the husbandly thing to do? To be honest, it sounds very much like horseman logic.
Besides, you're killing humans.
Not the ones you want dead.
I secure my dagger to my side.
I want them all dead. You're making my job easier.
I stare at him for several seconds, and it's like a grenade explodes in my mind. I'm helping his cause. Every single person I kill is one less person living on Earth. All thoughts of respect dissolve away as an acute sort of devastation sinks in. I sway a little on my feet, and for a moment I think I'm going to be sick. I assumed I was actually doing something useful. War finishes putting on his armor and comes towards me. Outside the tent, I can hear a few muffled footsteps as soldiers quietly leave their homes, readying themselves for a day of fighting.
Ready?
I almost say no. I'm still reeling from that revelation. The last thing I want right now is to play into the horseman's hand by killing more people. But then, I remember those soldiers who like to use raids as an opportunity to rape women or commit other atrocities. Someone still needs to keep them in line. War's word be damned. I nod to the horsemen, and together we leave the tent. This time, riding with War doesn't feel comforting in the least. The horseman holds me close, but he feels remote. I have a horrible suspicion he's taking his mind to that place where he kills. The city comes into existence in stages. First with a few decrepit buildings, then several more. Then rapidly, the city fills itself out. Port Said butts right up against the Mediterranean Sea, every square kilometer of it tightly packed with building after building. At this early hour, the city is quiet. So terribly quiet. My chest constricts. Only now am I beginning to realize what it truly means to be at the front of War's army. I've only seen battle once it's been raging for a time. I've never seen what ignites it. And now I'm having visions of War storming into homes and killing people right in their own beds. I need to get off. If anything, War's arm tightens on me.
I need to get off.
The horseman utterly ignores me, but when I start to struggle, his grip becomes unyielding. I might as well be pinned in by a steel band. War makes a clicking noise with his tongue, and Deimos begins to speed up until we're hurtling forward at a gallop. My dark brown hair is whipping behind me, and the dagger holstered at my hip is bumping into my thigh over and over again.
What are you doing?
I've no sooner asked it than I start to see a couple figures come out of the darkness, weapons gripped in their hands as they stare at us. It takes a little longer to notice the uniforms in the darkness. The Egyptian military. One of them knocks an arrow into his bow, pointing it at us.
Stop and state your business.
The other soldier beside him likewise raises his bow. War reaches behind his back, and I hear the ominous zing as he pulls his sword from its scabbard.
Don't, War!
Put down the weapon! Put it down, or we will shoot!
Please, don't!
He ignores me. In the next instant, an arrow comes whizzing by my face, so close I hear the hiss of it cutting through air. All the while, War keeps galloping onward, heading straight towards the uniformed men. He leans to the side of his saddle, his enormous sword gripped in his hand. Another arrow whizzes by, this one hitting the horseman in the chest. I hiss in a breath, and then War's upon the men. He swings his sword, cutting a soldier down like he was swatting away a fly. I swallow my scream, even as I feel a few droplets of blood hit me. The other Egyptian soldier turns on his heel and runs, shouting at the top of his lungs.
The horseman is here! War is here!
I struggle against the warlord all over again, trying to get away.
Stop it, Miriam.
Fuck that.
If I let you down now, the civilians will attack you. So mount my riders if they don't recognize you.
That makes a certain amount of sense. I mean, when you're at the front of the army entering a town to raid, the only person you have to avoid killing is the horseman himself. Everyone else is fair game. War runs down another soldier, cleaving his head from his shoulders. He's not going to stop. He won't ever stop. I start fighting him in earnest, even as the shouts carry down the city and more uniformed men come running in our direction.
Miriam!
Let me go!
He doesn't want to. I can feel it in his stubborn grip. Especially not now when people are starting to wander out of their houses and the Egyptian military unit is mobilizing.
Damn it, Miriam!
He sheathes his sword.
I cannot protect you if you're fighting me.
I swivel around.
You can't protect me at all right now!
As if to enunciate my point, another arrow whizzes by. His eyes widen a little as he realizes, probably for the first time, that, yeah, I might be right.
You don't get both me and your precious battle.
His jaw clenches, his eyes stormy. Behind us, I hear an otherworldly sort of howling rise up. I glance over War's shoulder in time to see his Phobos riders storming into the city, whooping and howling like animals as they descend. The horseman looks behind him, following my gaze, and I use the distraction to shove off him.
Wife!
I slip off Deimos and dart away, weaving into the darkness. I don't glance behind me, but I can hear the clatter of arrows and then the sound of War unsheathing his sword again.
Miriam!
Now people are beginning to leave their houses and the screams are starting to catch on. The Phobos riders thunder down the street, their howls becoming almost deafening. I have to duck to avoid getting gouged by an axe-wielding rider.
Miriam!
War's voice rings out again, but I don't dare tear my gaze away from the fighting to look at him. Another Phobos rider singles me out, breaking away from the group to hunt me down. Rapidly, I grab an arrow and knock it. I release the string, letting the arrow fly. It misses the rider, but it pierces the flesh of his mount. As I watch, the horse rears back and the man falls off. My hand itches to grab another arrow and finish the soldier off.
You're making my job easier.
I curse under my breath and run. Find the aviaries. If I can get there, maybe I can at least do some good. Around me, dozens of flaming arrows are arching through the sky. I never thought cities like Jerusalem or this one could burn. There's nothing so obviously flammable about them. But now that this city is catching fire right before me, I notice that there are canvas awnings and lines of clothes and curtains and shrubbery and wooden carts and stalls and so many other flammable things that can catch fire. And as I run, they do. People are beginning to swarm the streets as they try to escape. Children are crying. Hell, grown men and women are crying. Families are fleeing, and it's all so, so hopeless. I almost missed the aviary. The birds aren't making much noise, and everything on the street is drowning out whatever sounds they are making. I rush inside and nearly get beheaded by a middle-aged man with an axe. I jerk back just in time to miss the blade, but only just.
I'm not here to hurt you.
He grips his weapon tighter.
You look like it to me.
I hadn't thought through the fact that I might look like the enemy.
I want to send out a message.
The man brings his arm back, the axe blade gleaming.
I bet you do, you filthy liar. Get out of my building now.
War can raise the dead. Did you know that?
Get out.
He has an army, but he uses his dead to kill off everyone. That's why no one knew he was coming.
Behind the man, I see a shaking older woman still in her nightclothes, probably his wife.
Please!
I beg, looking at her. Already the sounds are getting louder as the army encroaches outside, and the caged birds are beginning to look a little agitated, fluttering, then resettling their wings.
I need to warn other cities. There's not much time.
Why should I believe you?
Because I've seen it.
He still doesn't appear convinced.
Look, if I wanted to do you harm, I wouldn't try to reason with you. If we can get a message out, we can alert other cities.
And just maybe they'll have time to evacuate before War's army arrives. The woman at the back of the building steps up to her husband.
Listen to the girl.
The man looks harried.
She's fighting with the horseman.
If you don't write down her message, I will.
There is a fire in her eyes. I feel my throat thicken. This is the piece of humanity that I've been missing for so long. Bravery in the face of death. Huffing, the man heads over to a desk pushed beneath the storefront's main window.
What would you have me write?
I turn to face the door, drawing an arrow, prepared to defend this place while I can. I take a deep breath.
War is coming. The horseman has an army at least 5,000 strong, and he's been traveling down the coast from Israel. He can raise the dead, and his dead patrol every city he's raided, looking to kill anyone who survived.
The door to the aviary bangs open, and instinctively I release my arrow. I hit the soldier right between the eyes. The woman screams, recoiling back a little. I grimace, but knock my bow again, pointing the weapon at the ground while I reach out and lock the door. I call over to the man.
Port Said is already falling as I write this. Warn all you can of what I've told you.
A stone crashes through the window, just missing the aviary owner. He shouts, dropping his pen as the rock slams into the giant cage behind him, startling the birds. His wife rushes over to him, grabbing some of the thin sheets of paper and pulling him away from the window. As I watch, she grabs a pen and begins scribbling down the same message. My heart is beating so loudly I can hear it. This isn't going to work. The fighting is right outside. I can hear other houses being raided, other families screaming for their lives. Worst of all are those cries that suddenly cut out. So many innocent people are being butchered, and behind all this carnage is war. The door rattles as someone tries to get inside. It stops jiggling a second later, but then I see a man's face in the window, a sword in his hand. I level my arrow at his face.
Move along, unless you want to die.
Without another word, the soldier leaves the way he came. I release the breath. So far, I've been fortunate, but it's only a matter of time before my luck runs out. The man steps into a communal birdcage behind his desk. Rolling up the note, he slips it into a tiny cylinder on the back of one of the pigeons. Once he's finished attaching the message, he carries the bird to the back of the building and opens the door. A soldier is waiting for him. All I hear is a flutter of wings and a choking sound. Then the man is falling and the spooked bird is flapping into the sky. His wife screams, dropping her pen and paper to rush over to him. No, no, no! I lift my bow and arrow, but before I can get a clean shot on the soldier, I hear the thump of an arrow and I see her body recoil. Another arrow follows. The woman ran to her husband when she saw him killed. She ran to him. War thinks humans are the scourge of the earth. But is there anything so powerful as the way we love? As soon as she falls, I see the woman who shot her. I release my own arrow and eclipse the soldier in the shoulder. With a cry, she stumbles out of the back doorway, and now I'm stalking through the aviary, reloading. I can't look at the fallen couple who spent their final minutes trying to relay my message. Outside, the soldier is trying to yank my arrow out of her flesh. I shoot her again, this time in the leg. She screams, half in pain and half in anger.
Oh, what the fuck are you doing?
She clearly recognizes me. I lean over her and grab the arrows from her quiver, adding them to my own supply, just in case I run low.
I'm trying to save humanity, asshole!
With that, I stalk back inside and kick the door shut. I'm going to die today. That thought has crossed my mind during pretty much every battle, but today it settles on me with cold certainty. A macabre part of me wants to know what War would think about that. He seems to care a great deal about my well-being, but he doesn't love me. And he doesn't mind death, and he's brought me into battle once again, despite how dangerous it is. Would he mourn me? He might. I head back over to the desk and grab the scribbled messages from where they lay. Between the husband and wife, they managed to get two more notes written. I take them both and fold them up, cramming them into tubes attached to the back of the first two pigeons I reach. Clutching the birds close, I run back outside. The soldier I shot is still there, leaning against the wall, trying to remove my arrows.
What you're doing is pointless.
She watches me as she works.
Yeah, right back at ya.
I eye her futile efforts to remove the arrowheads. I release the birds, watching them rise into the morning air. I don't linger long enough to see whether or not they make it out of the city. I think it might crush the last bit of my hope if I saw them fall. I head back inside. There are 5 more birds in the cage. Between 3 people, we've only managed to release 3 birds. I grab the pen and paper from where the woman dropped them, and I begin to scribble out the same message I instructed the couple to write. It's an odd sensation, fighting against the horsemen, fighting against God himself, apparently. This is about the time that people pray. Instead, I'm trying to sabotage war's efforts. I don't know where that puts me on the scale from good to evil. I always assumed good was synonymous with God. I don't know now. But this feels right. I have to assure that's worth something. I miraculously manage to get 2 more birds out with messages before a Phobos rider hops through the window. Our eyes lock, and a bolt of recognition shoots through me. Uzair, the man who caught me spying on war and who caught me killing another Phobos rider.
You!
He stalks towards me. My bow is resting over my shoulder and my dagger is still holstered. Before I can reach for either, Uzair grabs me by the hair and yanks me forward. I stumble, yelping when a clump of hair rips free. My hand goes to my head, my eyes pricking at the blinding pressure in my scalp.
What are you doing?
But I already know. This is about the Phobos rider I killed back in Arish. It might also be about the second rider that War killed, the one who challenged the horseman when he removed me from the lineup of traitors. Without answering me, Uzair drags me outside, where smoke from several burning buildings now obscures the morning light. I knew I had a rocky relationship with War's Phobos riders, but I didn't realize it was this bad. They are, after all, relentlessly devoted to their leader. I guess that devotion doesn't extend to me. Hussein had warned me to watch my back. I just hadn't listened carefully enough. Uzair throws me into the street. As I hit the ground, I hear an ominous wooden crack come from one of my weapons. Please let that be one of my arrows. Anything but the bow.
Get up, you filthy bitch.
Gritting my teeth, I push myself to my feet.
Eating our food, sleeping in our gap.
He prowls towards me.
Sucking the warlord's cock.
He closes in on me and pulling his fist back, he swings. I stumble out of the way, just barely managing to avoid the hit.
Just because War won't let you suck it himself doesn't mean you have to get jealous.
I'm goading him. I don't care. The Phobos rider comes at me again, swinging once, twice, 3 times. I evade the hits, each by a hair's breadth.
I was hoping I'd come across you. I thought you'd be smart enough to stay away from the fight. It's so easy to die out here.
His meaning is clear.
It's so easy to make you disappear.
And it really is. People don't pay that much attention. Everyone else is busy killing or saving themselves. It was sheer bad luck that this man caught me killing his comrade during the last battle. I grab War's dagger and unsheath it. Uzair smirks at the sight. He pulls out his own sword, which is much bigger and longer. Fuck me. In fighting as insects, bigger tends to be better.
Never going to win this way.
My eyes sweep over the street, over the combatants and the carnage. Far in the distance, I see War. He's hard to miss on his red steed, but this far away, he can't possibly recognize me in my black pants and dusty shirt. I'm just another civilian about to die. My attention returns to Uzair, who's closing in on me again. Screw it. I turn on my heel and take off in the opposite direction.
Fucking coward!
I hear him shout, followed by the sound of him sheathing his sword.
Come back!
It's too good to hope that Uzair will just let me go. I mean, I do hope it, but I'm not surprised when I hear the pound of his heavy footfalls behind me. If he gets a hold of me, it's game over. He's a better fighter, and he has a better weapon and a longer striking range, and he's undoubtedly had much more practice than me at killing. I pump my arms and legs, running towards War, even though he's far away. Too far away. To my right are several burning buildings. Making a quick decision, I dart for the nearest one, dashing through the gaping doorway. Inside, the air is hazy with smoke, but I catch sight of stairs just as I hear Uzair closing in behind me. I sprint for the staircase, coughing as I breathe in lungfuls of smoke.
You're not getting away! Not today! Our warlord can't save you out here!
I take the stairs 2 at a time. When will this asshole give up? As soon as I reach the second floor, I stagger a little at the sight I'm met with. The hallway stretches out in front of me, and the far end of it is blazing, thick plumes of smoke rolling away from the flames. This was a bad idea. I charge forward anyway. So long as Uzair hasn't given up the chase, I need to keep running. I squint against the thickening smoke and the blistering heat. I can barely see where I'm going. Behind me, I hear the Phobos rider's persistent footfalls. Fuck! Run, run, run! I flee down the hall, where the fire is worst. I don't know what I'm doing. By the time I realize that I might be able to jump out of a window, I've passed the room still intact enough to do so. I don't hear the metallic hiss of Uzair's sword when he unsheathes it behind me, but I feel the tip of it catch the back of my neck when he swings, the blade slicing open my skin and lopping off a chunk of my hair. I trip, sprawling out across the ground, the arrows in my quiver scattering. The floor is hot to the touch.
He tried to behead me!
I can feel my blood dripping down the back of my neck, the heat evaporating most of it. The rooms to my left, my right, and ahead of me are all engulfed in flame. Trapped. I flip onto my back as Uzair looms over me, swallowing down my rising fear. I still have my dagger gripped tightly in my hand, but it's next to useless at this point. This is my end.
Wife.
I can almost hear the horseman's voice in my head.
Don't die on me now.
War won't forgive you for this.
This might be the first time I've openly acknowledged what I think I mean to the horseman.
He's not going to know it was me.
I suppose he won't. War might not find my body at all. The thought sends my pulse thundering. I'm not sure why it bothers me, only that it does. I take a deep breath and stare up at the Phobos rider, my forearms braced against the scorching ground. Uzair pulls back his sword, the blade already caked with blood. He swings downward, aiming for my neck, his attack controlled. I watch that blade fall, and I almost let him get me.
I'm not ready!
There are things I haven't said to War, things I haven't done, and things I still haven't admitted to myself. I roll away, barely missing the blow. The Phobos rider swings again at me, and this time, the edge of his blade opens my arm and trails across my chest. And goddamn, it hurts like a bitch! I bring my boot up and kick Uzair's wrist. The impact jars his weapon from his hand and the sword clatters to the ground. He reaches for it, bending down within striking range, and that's when I lunge. I plunge my dagger into the rider's neck, grimacing when his blood spurts out like a fountain. He stares at me, furious, like that wasn't supposed to happen. I was just a helpless, defeated woman. Uzair tumbles forward next to me. By the time his body hits the ground, he's all but dead. I pull my dagger from his throat and stagger to my feet. Need to move. The walls are on fire, and the ground is becoming unbearably hot, even through the soles of my boots. Now that the fight is over, however, I move slowly, my muscles leaden. I heave in several deep breaths, but I can't seem to pull in enough air. Instead, smoke burns my lungs. I've only taken a few steps forward when, ahead of me, part of the ceiling caves in, barricading me and turning my only exit into a thick wall of fire. My stomach bottoms out.
Should have let Uzair kill me.
It would be a better death than the one I'm going to get. I walked myself into my own grave coming into this building. The flames stream up the walls like some savage orange river. I cover my mouth with my shirt and squint against the smoky darkness. Can't see, can't breathe. I stumble towards the obstruction, even as more of the ceiling crashes down around me. I'm starting to feel faint from all the smoke inhalation. This is the end. A shadow bursts through the debris, the flames licking its sides. From the darkness, I see a blood-red shape take form. War's a horse, I realize. Deimos gallops towards me. My eyes move up, and I meet the violent, turbulent gaze of the horseman himself. His eyes burn brighter than the fire, and his expression, like heaven itself couldn't stop him. War swings himself off his horse and runs to me. When he gets to my side, the horseman cups my face, his hands cool against my burning skin.
What were you thinking?
His shout resonates above the roar of the fire. I touch his face, my breath labored. My lungs are on fire, and I can't seem to stay grounded. The only thing that's keeping me present is War's panicked expression and his grip on me.
You could have died.
And then he kisses me. He ravages my mouth like it's a city he's set to destroy. His lips part mine, and then the taste of him fills my mouth. It's like savoring heaven and hell and earth and death and all the things there aren't names for. This doesn't feel like all our other touches, the ones where we owed each other something. War's massive body trembles with anger and need and want. Want and want and want and want. I think I'm faint with relief and lust, and that the darkening air must be to blame for the black dots that cloud my vision. But then I feel my legs buckle, and then I feel nothing at all. I don't remember War catching me. I don't remember us mounting his steed, but I do wake up in time to see us charge through the burning building. The horseman's hand is under my shirt, his palm nestled between my breasts. Even now, when we're still in danger, he's dead set on healing me. The ceiling and walls are falling around us like tears, and yet Deimos remains steady through it all, even as embers drop onto his dark mane. I swipe them away, though even that small action causes my vision to darken. We clamber down the stairwell, the jostling ride causing me to cough until I'm breathless. There's no gradual shift from darkness to light. One moment we're inside the smoky building, and the next, we're outside, daylight blazing about us. I can barely see the sun through the burning haze of the city, but still the sight of it, bright and bloody, causes a sob to slip out of me. The horseman pulls me tighter against him. I thought I was going to die. I was certain of it. War glances down at me with his terrible eyes.
Not today, wife. Not ever.